be here today. I do want to mention that today's learning is sponsored by Rookie Travis, Alan Sector, and Meira, Akiva, Ben, and Zach Sector, Le'ilui Nishmat Avraham Ben Yitzchak Travis, Alav HaShalom, whose second yard site is today. So that is, a very special zechut. We're at a very difficult time in Am Yisrael, and we see what's happening around the world, and it's very important for us to keep our connection with Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, really very strong. And I think that it's really something important that not only our Tehillim, but our learning, our Tefillot, our actions that we do, right? We give a lot of tzedakah, a lot of people volunteer, and then we should really remember that all of our kochot should really be going to strengthening everything that's going with Am Yisrael, with Eretz Yisrael, and really put all our efforts forward. And one of those reasons is that I picked to start our limud today with Benot Slovchad. And Benot Slovchad, there are the booklets. We're actually going to do two classes on Benot Slovchad, so we're going to do half today and half in our next class. Then we're going to do Esther, then we're going to do Huldah, and then we're going to do Miriam. And I really staggered them in a certain way to start with Eretz Yisrael and Benot Slovchad, then to move to Esther, because it's going to be right before Purim, and then to do about Huldah, who is just a great Nevi'ah and a real Melumedet in Am Yisrael, who really played a very important role, and then to end with Miriam, because we're going to go into Pesach. So that's how I framed these shiurim. Now, one of the main things that we are going to do is that we want to see, right, number one, what the role of these unusual women were in the Pshat, but also I really want to see what do Chazal say? What do the Mefarshim say? What is the view of our rabbinic leaders for millennia about the women in Tanakh? And we're starting with Benot Slovchad. And I picked Benot Slovchad to start with because in one sense they don't come from a famous family, in a sense that, oh, Miriam, of course, was from the Moshe, Aaron, right, Amram and Yocheved family. But these are five sisters who really played an unbelievable role in making sure that Bnei Israel's focus was towards Eretz Israel. And I think that's an amazing lesson for us, that we women have such a strong ability to really focus Am Yisrael in many different directions. And right now, we definitely need a lot of focus on Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to see at different times what the women were able to really focus and save Am Yisrael from and also lead them towards. Okay, so I named this Benot Slovchad, What's in a Name? Because whenever we speak about Benot Slovchad, we're going to speak about them as Benot Slovchad. And we're going to name every single one all the time. So why do we constantly remind ourselves, oh, who the father was? Every one of the individual women's name. Why don't we just say, okay, just say Benot Slovchad, or just say the five sisters, they're the famous ones. Why do we name each one, and why do we always name their lineage? Because they're going to be behaving in a way that really shows where they come from and the lessons that they learned from the family and how they're moving forward. So they're the ultimate examples of what legacy is. Legacy means you know where you came from and you know what to do with that and you know how to move forward with that. And sometimes the legacy is not always amazing, but you know how to rally all of your kochot, all of your energies, and to really make that difference. So we're beginning. Where do we start with that Eretz Yisrael is very important? Of course, Avram is told, Lech Lecha. And we know as we go through the Avot, we have Yitzchak never leaves Eretz Yisrael, but Yaakov does, and he has to come back to Eretz Canaan. But we know that there is a famine, and Bnei Yisrael go down to Mitzrayim, and they're all in Mitzrayim. Yaakov even comes to Mitzrayim with all Shiftei Kah, all of the sons and their entire families, and Yaakov is about to die. So we're in Breshit Perek Memchet. So what does Yaakov say? He's in Galut, right? He is in Mitzrayim. And we see Perek Memchet. Vayomer lai hinini mafracha vihirbiticha unitaticha likalamim v'natati et ha'aretz hazot lezaracha acharecha achuzat olam. So before Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, Hashem appears to him. And Hashem says, okay, right? You're fruitful, you multiplied, Eretz Yisrael is yours, right? And Shnei Banecha Noladim Lecha Be'eretz Mitzrayim, the message that I got from Hashem, now I'm giving you the bracha, right? And telling Yosef and Bnei Yisrael, right? Oh, that they're going to really be successful in Mitzrayim, which means he's going to have success. What are they going to be? Yaakov now tells Yosef, V'ata shnei banecha noladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim. Remember, Yosef had to go down to Mitzrayim, and he has two sons there. But these two sons are going to be equal to Yaakov as all of his own sons. So these are grandsons that are going to be like sons. The two sons you have, Ephraim uMenashe, kiruven v'Shimon yuli. Which means what Yaakov is saying is that future generations, right, even grandchildren are like children. Which means this idea of legacy, it's not like, okay, to our kids we care about them, but we don't really care about future generations. Okay, the grandsons, the granddaughters, do you remember their names, right? Do you know who they are? What is Yaakov saying? Continuity makes a big difference. And it wasn't just with the avot, father, son, father, son. Now we're talking about legacy that goes future. We're talking about the third generation. So just like Yaakov got this legacy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's saying now to Yosef, and I'm not just giving this bracha to the next generation, it really goes down multiple generations. So Ephraim and Menashe, who are Yosef's sons, are going to be like Yaakov's sons. And they're going to get Nachala in Eretz Yisrael like all the other sons. Which means, what is Yaakov saying? We're now in Mitzrayim. I'm giving you a bracha that my grandsons are like my sons. And when we get back to Eretz Yisrael, which means the promise here is that we're going to get back to Eretz Yisrael, which means Eretz Yisrael is always a focus. And Yaakov says, and that moment, even your children, who are my grandsons, and this is unusual, are going to get a double Nachala. They're going to inherit as if they were first generation. And this excites Yosef so much, and he wants his sons also to get a direct bracha from the father. So he's telling, okay, you're going to inherit. You're going to be like my sons. But Yosef also wants them to get a bracha, the actual direct bracha from Yosef, from Yaakov. So what does he do? Look at number two, Breshit Perek Memchet. Yosef takes his two sons, right, Ephraim and Menashe, and we all know the story. He puts Ephraim towards Yaakov's right hand, Menashe at Yaakov's right hand, and Ephraim at Yaakov's left hand, because Menashe is the oldest, which means what's the usual accepted thing? You treat the oldest as the oldest and the youngest as the youngest, and we should keep that order. But Yaakov switches his hands. Why is that so interesting? What's all the trouble from Yosef? Where did it come from? It came from, right, Yaakov giving Yosef a ketonet pasim, not treating everyone according to birth order, right? So it's fascinating that Yosef, with his own sons, wants there to be, let's keep birth order the way it's supposed to be. The Bechor, we care about him. We don't want him to be emotionally scarred, right, by you switching your hands. I'm making it clear. Make sure Menashe gets the premier bracha, and, you know, Ephraim gets the second. But what does Yaakov do? He switches his hand. So what we see about Yaakov is this idea of making sure that destiny, even though it's not what we are expecting, is something that Yaakov has done many times. Number one, with Yosef. Number two, with Ephraim and Menashe saying they're like his sons, giving them a double portion. And now we see when he's going to give them the bracha, he's going to switch his hands. So what we're seeing here is very interesting, is a father playing very important role in his son's destiny, but also in the grandson's destiny. So this idea of destiny and continuity is very important. And not only that, also making sure that we're going to have destiny and we're having continuity even past that when they're in Eretz Yisrael. And what do we know the last things that Yaakov does in his life? He gives brachot to all the shvatim. So again, this idea of making sure that we're going to have continuity is something that we see very intensely with Yaakov. With Avraham, right? Hashem really gives Yitzchak the big bracha. With Yitzchak, he wants to give a bracha, but the only time we see him planning to give an active bracha by his own initiative is really to Esav. And it's Rivka who has to really take a role there. And only after he gives that bracha to Yaakov, thinking he's Esav, and then also gives the bracha to Esav, only then does he give the Avraham bracha to Yaakov. So the only one who we see very thoughtfully is constantly thinking about future generations and what's going to happen in continuity is Yaakov Avinu. And as we know, he switches his hands, and he also gives the bracha. Look at the end of number 2 in Perek Memchet. Yes. We're in Pasuk Kaf. What bracha does he give them? Bayomahu lemor, becha yivarech Yisrael lemor, yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim b'chi Menashe, vayasem et Ephraim lifnei Menashe. Even in the bracha that he gives, it's not enough that he switches his hands. He also says, when we're going to give the bracha for all the generations, we're going to say, yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'Menashe. And here we are, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years later, and we are giving this same bracha and speaking about destiny and continuity, the way that Yaakov is saying, I want all generations to bless their kids this way. And what we see fascinating is, again, this idea of Ephraim and Menashe. So it's very interesting. We know that Ephraim really does take a very big leadership role. Through Ephraim, we have Yoshua bin Nun. Yoshua bin Nun leads Bnei Israel into Eretz Israel. So this legacy of continuity, leadership, Eretz Israel, we see coming from Ephraim. But we also see other leadership, which might not be so positive. And we see the legacy of Yeravam ben Nevat, who splits the Malucha. He's also from Shevet Ephraim. And he takes a leadership role, but he takes the 10 tribes and splits them from Bnei Israel. So we have the 10 tribes up north that did Egle Zahav, right, that make anyone a Kohen, make anyone a Navi. So, yes, there's leadership, but there's not only positive leadership where we speak about Ephraim, but still this potential that Ephraim has. And that's why in Yirmiyahu we keep on saying, right, in Perek Lamed Aleph, HaBen Yakir Li Ephraim, symbolizing the Aseret HaShvatim, so much potential, right, that really can be harnessed. Which means, because there's something special in Ephraim and Menashe being from Yosef, even though who really got the leadership? Yehuda. And we have David, and Mashiach's going to come from Yehuda. But we also have this idea that Mashiach ben Yosef, right, is going to come from Yosef. And we are going to get Aseret HaShvatim back in the end. So there is something special about Ephraim. But again, who do we feel bad for? Who are we constantly feeling for? Menashe. Right? So we're going to find out about Menashe. But let's continue what's happening in Breshit. Look at Perek Memchet, we're on number 3. What is the tzivui of Yaakov to his sons? And he says, I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So the original bracha, and what he gives Ephraim and Menashe, is that they're going to have nachala in Eretz Yisrael. That means continuity, life. But what Yaakov is also setting as a precedent is that even death, being buried, is something very important. Because what Yaakov is setting is not his own idea. This idea is ready from Ma'arad HaMachpelah, that when you have your dead buried in a certain place, it gives it a certain Kedushah. So Eretz Yisrael has a certain Kedushah. By us burying our dead in Eretz Yisrael, that brings a certain Kedushah, but also a stake that we have in this place. And one of the first things Jewish communities did, wherever they were, was the cemetery and the mikvah were the two things, sign of life, but also a sign of rootedness and respect for the past and death, but also that, at least for the amount of time that we're here, right, we are here and setting certain roots. But because the idea of that developed Gilgul and Neshamot and Eretz Yisrael is so kadosh also for burial. So we all know that there's a very big interest for Am Yisrael to find burial plots in Eretz Yisrael. Not only because, okay, when Mashiach comes, you'll have less, you know, place to be megalgel, right, your bodies until you come to Eretz Yisrael and do Tchiyat HaMetim. Of course, that's one idea. But the main idea is as simple as possible. That's what Abraham wanted to make sure. That's what Yitzchak did. That is what Yaakov feels is so important. That he says, even though I buried Rachel on the way, right, in Eretz Yisrael, but on the way, I want to be buried in Hebron. So another connection to Eretz Yisrael that Yaakov is setting up is not only when you're in Eretz Yisrael that you bury your dead in Eretz Yisrael, even if you're away, your sites always have to be in Eretz Yisrael, and they set up a whole convoy to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why he calls it, not only does Abraham call it Achuzat Kever, look at number 3, Breshit Perek Memtet, right? He says, please bury me in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, but he also calls it La'achuzat Kaver. Achuza means that you're holding on to it, and achiza, which means having this burial space is also a kind of kinyan on the land, a kinyan in this place. And that's why he says, Avraham, right, was buried, and his wife Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and also Leah was buried there. So that's why that is the appropriate place to be buried. So we see all these connections, continuity, legacy, Eretz Yisrael, life and death. Continuity in the sense of living in Eretz Yisrael and being buried in Eretz Yisrael, we see is a very strong concept already in the end of Sefer Breshit, but it's around when we're talking about Yoshua Binun ancestry and also talking about Menashe ancestry. So Ephraim ancestry and Menashe ancestry. And of course, we know, look at Perek Nun. What's one of the most important things that Yosef now asks at the end of his life? He says, okay, I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And Bnei Yisrael, when they leave Eretz Yisrael in Yitziat Mitzrayim, bring the Aron of Yosef to Eretz Yisrael. And it's one of the biggest symbols that we have of his loving Eretz Yisrael. We don't have a statement about all the other Shvatim, right? Were they brought back to Eretz Yisrael? Is it because Yosef was a great Egyptian individual and that's why, you know, he had to be in Mitzrayim and then only later brought to Eretz Yisrael? But this idea of loving Eretz Yisrael, wanting to be in Eretz Yisrael, even in death, is something that we associate with Yosef, because he asks, and what does he say? Veha'alitem et atzmotai mizeh. And also, what's the language that is used? To bring me up, aliyah. So in life and death, we talk about going to Eretz Yisrael as a type of aliyah. Now, you have to understand, Yosef was sold by the brothers, and he was sent down to Mitzrayim against his will, right? So his being separate and not being able to live those last years in Eretz Yisrael before the famine came was really something that he couldn't do anything about. But at this point, he's asking that, at my death, I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So we see that this idea of Yosef is very important. And also, in the end of his life, the brothers wonder, oh, is Yosef angry with us? And he says, no, my job was here to take care of you, to support you, and Hashem had his plans. So we end with Yosef with wanting to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So with this in our background, and, right, the sea, cool of the Adayim. Now we're moving all the way ahead to Bamidbar, right? We're moving to Bamidbar, and in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, we're counting Bnei Israel. And when we count Bnei Israel in the beginning of Bamidbar, right, when does this take place? This takes place, right, in the second year that Bnei Israel are out of Mitzrayim, so in the beginning of their journey. So in the beginning of their journey, when we count Bnei Israel, look at Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Bet, Livnei Yosef, we're calling, right, always Ephraim and Menashe under the category of Bnei Yosef, even though each one got to be a Shevet in and of themselves, right? We don't always say Ephraim, Ben Yosef, Menashe, Ben Yosef, Shevet Ephraim, Shevet Menashe. But here, right, it's Bizchut Yosef that they're getting a double portion. And how are we counting them? Ephraim Letoldotam, and then we're counting the Menashe Shevet. So we first start with Ephraim and then Menashe. So the first time we count Bnei Israel and we're counting Yosef, we are mentioning Ephraim first. Just like Yaakov said, right? Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chi Menashe. So we mention Ephraim first. Now, in Bamidbar Perek Tet, Bnei Israel are in Mitzrayim, are in the Midbar, they left Eretz Israel, and they're about to make Pesach, right? For the first time in the Midbar. So look at number 6. We're in Perek Tet. I just wanted to go in order here for a very specific reason. So we have Pesach. You have to celebrate Pesach, and it's in the Midbar. And by you, ha'anashim asher hayu tmeim lenefesh adam. There were a whole bunch of people who were tameh lenefesh. What do we know? You can't bring Korban Pesach, right, if you're tameh. Tameh lemet. If you are impure from touching a dead body, being in the presence of a dead body, a lot of the Midrashim say, why did these specific people come to talk to Moshe and say, we were specifically Tameh Lamet? So there's a beautiful Midrash that they were the ones carrying Yosef's body through the Midbar, and as a result, they were Tameh Lamet. So that's why, very interesting, we're going to see what interesting connections do we have in this context. So they were sacrificing their purity in order to bring Yosef's body to Eretz Yisrael. Because what did he say? Bring back my body to Eretz Yisrael. They had to carry him all the 40 years, right, that they were in the Midbar and bring him to Eretz Yisrael. So this is the first year they're in the Midbar. And what is the language? Look at Bamidbar Perek Tet Pasuk Vav. They say we're tmeim lanefesh. We can't do Pesach. We can't eat from Korban Pesach. So what do? We're going to be missing the ability to eat Korban Pesach. Now this is a very special Korban. It's your connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That is how you show that you are free religiously. You are fighting against the gods of Mitzrayim, and this was a very important identity that you had with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's why Korban Pesach is really unusual. And we have a halacha. There was a debate. If you are a convert in the time that there was a Beit HaMikdash, right, was the first, and even with that, because the question is, right, do you need Beit HaMikdash for Korban Pesach? And there was a debate, right, can you reinstate that? But that's a separate issue, right? The official, right, view, of course, is not. But this was a debate because Korban Pesach is a little different, right? Because they also were able to do it in Mitzrayim without, right, the Mizbeach. But Korban Pesach, right, they said we missed the time to do Korban Pesach. But Korban Pesach is an identity mitzvah. We have a halacha or debate among the Rishonim, right? If someone converts, do they then right away have to do Korban Pesach? Why is that? Because Korban Pesach is your identity as a Jew. So the first thing that you have to do once you converted is that you have to bring Korban Pesach, because that is your identity to being part of Am Yisrael, because Yitziat Mitzrayim, Korban Pesach. We don't do that the halacha, and it was never done the halacha, but this is a very good philosophical question. That means that if you weren't part of Korban Pesach, you felt that part of your Jewish identity was missing. So these people who were Tamel HaNefesh could not eat from Korban Pesach, say, we need another opportunity. So they come to Moshe, but look at the language. I bolded the words that we're going to focus on. Vayikrevu lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Aharon bayom hahu. They come close to Moshe and Aaron. Now, when Bnei Israel constantly were speaking to Moshe and Aaron in Mitzrayim, when there was the increase of the hard work because Moshe and Aaron wanted to save Bnei Israel, and Paro got mad, and they made it harder for them to make bricks, Bnei Israel were complaining and angry. Later on, every time Bnei Israel have a problem, they are milinim, vayikahalu, they gang up on Moshe and Aaron. They are leaning on Moshe and Aaron. They're ostracizing Moshe and Aaron. But these individuals who want to come closer to Hashem are also having an amazing amount of respect for the leaders of their generation. And the language is very stark here. Vayikrevu, they're coming close, lifnei Moshe ve'Aaron. And what do they say? Look, we're tameh lenefesh adam. Lama nigara, why are you excluding us? Why should we be excluded? Levilti hakrivet korban Hashem. What is Korban coming close. So by not letting us do Korban Pesach, you're making us feel distant from Hashem. And there's no reason for that, just because technically we were Tamel and Nefesh. When Korban Pesach was done, when all of Bnei Israel were doing Korban Pesach, and they won't have enough time to become Tahor before Korban Pesach, so the question is, what are you going to do about the fact that we feel removed from Hashem? But they don't come to Moshe complaining and angry. They do it by building a consensus, by coming close, and by not wanting to be excluded. So what does Hashem say? What does Moshe say to them? Pasuk Chet, we're on number 6, Perek Tet. Pasuk Chet, Imdu ve'eshma'a mayitzaveh Hashem lachem. Stand here, right? And I'm going to listen what Hashem is going to command. What does that mean? I don't know the answer, obviously, says Moshe. But if you stand here, I'm going to listen to what Hashem is going to tell you. And what does Hashem tell Moshe? Ah, he tells him, yeah, speak to them, that if you're Tamel HaNefesh, you have what they call in Israel Moed Bet, right? If you can't take the test when the test is being done, and especially in universities, and now it's a very big issue in Israel, because a lot of the soldiers, a lot of the reservists were fighting. They're missing a lot of university. And the universities really are doing a very, you know, big job of trying to accommodate all the people who could not take the exams and do the tests when they were supposed to be done. And the American university, like Reichman, was continuing because a lot of the students were foreign. But the universities were closed, but how do you get them up to speed that they're going to be able to take all their tests? So in Israel, we always had the issue of the army, but now it's even more complicated. So there's Moed Bet, Moed Gimel, Moed Dalet, so many different times that you could take the exam. But they're coming to Moshe, and they're asking, okay, when can we do Korban Pesach? So he says, I don't know, we never had this before, that, you know, you can have a second chance. But Hashem says yes. And when do they do it? Pesach Sheni. This is when we learn about Pesach Sheni, that they do have a second chance. They are able to bring Korban Pesach, and it's going to be not in Nisan, but it's going to be Yud Dalet Iyar, Mamash, a month later. So they have an opportunity to come close to Hashem and bring Korban Pesach, because Korban Pesach is so important. And this was one of the reasons that a lot of the debates among the Rishonim were that if you missed Korban Pesach, that you need to have another time to do it. Or if you just converted, that you can fill in this opportunity, because Korban Pesach is something so basic to Am Yisrael. Okay, now we're moving almost 40 years ahead, right? I guess like 38, 39. Now we're in Bamidbar Perek Havav. Now we're counting Bnei Yisrael after the sin, right, of the Meraglim. Everyone from the age of 20 and up who was counted to be a soldier, right, died. So we have to count Bnei Israel again. Why? We're about to enter Eretz Israel. So counting number 2, so in Bamidbar, right, the non-Jews call it numbers. Why was it called numbers? Because it starts with numbers and ends with numbers. Counting Bnei Israel in the beginning of their journey, who left Mitzrayim, and counting Bnei Israel who are going to enter Eretz Israel. So in Perek Kavav, when you see already, we have Bnei Yosef. Excuse when we're me. Counting Yosef.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry. Is somebody in a green Jeep blocking another car in our back parking lot here? Yes? I'm so sorry. She's got a leak, you know. Yeah?
Green Jeep.
Yeah. You parked behind somebody? It's like a green, it's right in this back parking lot?
Yeah.
Are you parked behind somebody? Blocked somebody in?
I didn't think I was blocking.
But are you behind the car? Okay, come on, please, yeah. You're blocking somebody. Okay, great. Thank you so much. Sorry about that.
Okay. So the second time we count Bnei Israel in Bamidbar Perek Havav, and it says, oh, Bnei Yosef, right? We're calling Bnei Yosef. L'mishpachotam Menashe ve'Ephraim. The second time we count Bnei Israel, we're counting Menashe first, and then we're counting Ephraim. And when we're counting Bnei Israel in this second count, we're counting Menashe, and we're talking about Slovchad, right? We're counting every single family, which we also did, but not to this extent in the first counting. And look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Shlokha ben Hefer, one of the individuals from the Gilad family, had no sons. Lo hayu lo banim ki im banot. Right? He only had daughters. So what would you expect? That's enough. Just say he only had daughters. That's why he won't get a nachala. Why are we counting everyone now? Because we need to know the family names. Because every plot of land is going to have a family name. So you have to know the heads of the family. So Tzlochad's going to get a plot. Oh, but he doesn't get a plot because he doesn't have any sons. End of story. Why don't we just end it there? We're always just counting the men. So why all of a sudden here, when we're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, already in the counting, we're already highlighting Benot Tzlochad. And not only are we saying that he didn't have sons, but only daughters, we name every single one. V'shem Benot Tzlochad, right? What should we have said? V'shem Benotav, and the name of his daughters. Right? But it says Tzlochad. We're mentioning Tzlochad all over the place. And we're going to name every single daughter. We are in Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, Vetirza. Right? We're mentioning every single name. So what we see here is now, right, we have the families because they're going to be counted as the heads of the families in order to inherit. But unusually so, we're mentioning all the daughters that Tzlochad has. Look further on in Kafvav. We count also all of Levi, but Levi we're counting from a month and up, and Levi doesn't get Nachala in Eretz Yisrael. So here we have an interesting juxtaposition, where Nachala for every Shevet is by male only, and you inherit, and we put the family name on it, and the Ramban explains that we mention the families, and then we also count the individuals, because the family name was going to be on each plot, and then you're going to get the amount of inheritance according to your population. But what's fascinating here is that we're also counting the Levium, and we count them from a month old. What's fascinating also is that Levium don't inherit land, right? They have their own cities, but they don't really inherit land in Eretz Yisrael, which means juxtaposed to Benot Tzlochad is the idea that not inheriting land is also not something to say you're not important to your secondary citizen, because the Levium didn't inherit land, and why not? Because Bnei Yisrael gave them Truma and Maaser. Right? They supported them. And usually what does a woman do? She marries her husband. What's her husband's obligation? To support her. If we also gave land to the man and the woman and they got married, what's going to be the problem? There's going to be always some real estate that no one's living on and no one's taking care of and no one has achrayus for. Because someone's always going to be an absentee landlord. And it's always going to cause machloket, right? Are you going on the matrilineal line or you're going on the patrilineal line? And name always continues from the patrilineal line. So this was the solution that was found. So again, not inheriting land is not an insult, right? Because we see with Bnei Levi. And we also see something fascinating. Look at Pasuk Perek Kavav, I'm on number 8. It says, we're counting all these people from 20 and up, not from Levi, but all the rest, right? From 20 and up. And everyone from 20 and up who was counted the first time is not around. There are only two people, right, who survived. And the two people who survive when we're about to enter Eretz Yisrael are, turn the page, we're on page 2, is Caleb ben Yefune and Yoshua ben Nun. The only two people who are Meraglim, who were good, right, who spoke nicely and positively about Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have a chance to go into Eretz Yisrael, even though they were above 20 the first time they were counted. Levium, according to the Midrash that's based on this idea, because they were not counted from 20 and up, did not die in Chet HaMeraglim because they did not participate in Chet HaMeraglim, just like they didn't participate mostly in Chet HaEgel. Who else did not participate in Chet HaMeraglim or Chet HaEgel?
The women.
So what this piece is really trying to say is the unique position, spirituality, right, that the women have and that the Kohanim and Levi'im have in Am Yisrael, and two people who really showed their love for Eretz Yisrael, Caleb ben Yefune and Yoshua ben Nun. So we are juxtaposing all these pieces together in the Pshat. And look at number 9. So now we come to the actual story of Benot Tzlochad. Right? This is all intro. When we come to Benot Tzlochad, it's right after the counting of Bnei Yisrael, right after we mention Benot Tzlochad, right after we're talking about to go into Eretz Yisrael, right hinting, oh, the men didn't go in because they sinned with Chet HaMeraglim. The only two who spoke positively, right, are Yoshua ben Nun and Caleb ben Yefune. And of course, we all know what Shevet is Yoshua ben Nun from? Ephraim. So we already have a lot of good checks for Ephraim, oh, loving Eretz Yisrael, Yosef, right? First coming out of Mitzrayim, they're accounted first. Yoshua Bin Nun is going to lead Bnei Israel into Eretz Israel when we give the bracha, Yisimcha Elokim, Kefraim, Kimenashe. So what we're going to see is that what are Bnei Tzlofchad going to do? They're going to redeem the family name. They are going to show, oh, we are redeeming the Menashe name. Right? We are showing that that idea of loving Eretz Israel and this tradition from Yosef to Menashe, right, continues down in the generations, even not only father to son, right, but continues because everyone part of a legacy is part of that legacy. Whether you're a male, whether you're a female, where you're going to carry the name officially further down to all the generations or not, it's how you see where you come from, what you think is important, and how you also are going to look back to your legacy and make sure that you're going to make sure in perpetuity that those messages are kept. And that's what we see Bnei Tzlofchad are going to do. They're going to make sure that the idea that Menashe loved Eretz Yisrael and is part of the Yosef family, they're going to represent that amazingly. And you wouldn't expect them to because they're not Menashe ben Menashe in the names, right? They're not going to have, they don't have that yichus per se, but they represent, right, who they are and where they come from. I married into a very wonderful Rosenzweig family. I married Rav Rosenzweig, a big, wonderful Talmud Chacham, but I do have to say that I really continue a lot of the legacies that I learned from my family, right? For those who don't know, my mother, Yaffa Eliach, Alea Shalom, and my father, Rabbi David Eliach, Alav Shalom. So the idea that we can continue legacy and we continue making sure those traditions continue in the family is not something, oh, that's a modern idea that we're seeing. We're seeing this all the way in Chumash. And not only are we going to read it in a certain way, but we're going to see that's the way the Midrashim see it, that's the way the Mefarshim see it, and they're going to say, well, these are the messages that we want Bnei Tzlofchad to continue. So let's see, what do we learn, what do we see when we read Bnei Tzlofchad in the Pshat? So look at Bamidbar Perek Kaf Zayin. We're starting actually with the text. As I said, we're doing Bnei Tzlofchad as a two-parter. Look at number 9. Bamidbar Perek Kaf Zayin. Again, this is Smichut Parshiot. We go from the counting straight to Bnei Tzlofchad. Vatikravna Bnei Tzlofchad. So number 1, what do we see? The same language that we had all the way. Remember, that's decades ago. With Pesach Sheni, Bnei Tzlofchad come close. And what's the language? Vatikravna. So the same language, positive language that we had with Pesach Sheni, right? Bnei Tzlofchad bring back. So why do I have to say they're bringing it back? Because remember, what happened? Korach is in the interim. We have the Meraglim in the interim. We have the Mitlonanim. We have the Mitonanim. Every single bad thing that you could practically think of. And even recently, what did Bnei Israel complain about? They complained about water and Moshe hits the rock. And very recently, all the men are going to Baal Peor, right? And our Mizane with Benot Moav and Midian. So there's a lot of bad stuff that has been going on. So what we see Benot Tzlofchad bring back is that they're bringing back the way you're supposed to revere the authorities, the way you're supposed to revere Torah, the way you're supposed to really try to solve things, not by talking at someone or complaining, but by changing the way the conversation is done. They're bringing back that kind of peaceful discussion that we saw with Pesach Sheni, and the language is very similar. So, Vatikravna, number 1, they come close. And number 2, we're giving their whole yichus. Ben Tzlofchad, Ben Chefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menashe, Limishvachot Menashe, Ben Yosef. Which means every single way that we could think of giving them yichus, we do. We're saying every single way that we're connecting their background. So you would think that's enough. But no, then what are we doing? We're saying every single one's name, which means it's important to know who they are, their names. Each one is an individual, what their background is. But the fact that we're talking about them as individuals and naming them is showing that they really represent not only the past, but also themselves, which is, again, this beautiful transition. And what do they do, Pasuk Bet? Vatamodna lifnei Moshe. They're standing up before Moshe and Elazar, right? Aharon is not around anymore, but it's almost the same language, right? Look back at Pesach Sheni, right? But what is fascinating in Pesach Sheni? Let's do a good, you know, pshat analysis. It's Moshe who says, "Imdu ve'eshma'a ma'itzave Hashem lachem," right? Moshe is the one who says, "Stand, and I'm gonna hear what Hashem says." But what do we see with Bnei Tzlofchad? They're already standing tall. Whenever we use vata'amodna or vaya'amdu, is a certain kind of hityatzvut. Right, a real standing, not just, you know, you're just you're standing, but it's a certain kind of, you know, assuredness about yourself. So they're standing up before all the leaders of that generation. They go to Moshe, Elazar HaKohen, the Nisim, and all of the leaders of that generation, and all of the people, which means they're going and they're standing up before everyone, from the top all the way to the bottom. We have a lot of questions. That's what we're going to do next week, right? To answer all of our questions that we have, or all of our diukim that we're doing this week. Pasuk Gimel, what is their complaint? Avinu met bamidbar. Our father died in the desert. But he's not part of the people who are Noadim badat Korach. He just died in his own sin. Becheto met ubanim lo hayu lo. Which means, I understand, right, that Korach and anyone who rebelled and the Meraglim, we know why they got their punishments. But our father died in his own punishment. And he doesn't have sons, so why should his inheritance be taken away? He didn't do anything that inheritance should be taken away for. So we as daughters are coming forward. But what do we know about inheritance? Only sons inherit. So what right do they even have to ask this question? It's a sad story, but how do they have the guts to stand forward when they know the rules, right? But they still ask again. Look at Pasuk Dalet. Lama yigara shem avinu mitoch mishpachto. The same language that we had with Pesach Sheni. They don't want to be removed. They're doing this because they want to come close to Hashem. They want to come close to Eretz Yisrael. They're doing this because they want to continue the father's name. Which the father, right, not because of a sin that he did that he would lose, right, achizah and achuzan, Eretz Yisrael, right, it's not his fault. And just because he doesn't have daughters, it's not his fault, right? So we want to rectify this. Just because ki ein lo ben, right? So again, ubanim lo hayu lo ki ein lo ben. That's not enough of a reason for him to lose his achuza. Tana lanu achuza betoch achei avinu, right? We want an achuza, and they could have used the word nachala, but achuza, just like we used achuzat kever. We want something that is really going to be continuous. And look at the difference. With Moshe and Pesach Sheni, he says, okay, stand and I'm going to listen. But in Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayakrev Moshe et mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe brings their words, and Rav Hirsch says a beautiful idea, that because they formulated it so amazingly, almost like a korban that you're bringing to Hashem, he formulates it exactly the way they said it, lifnei Hashem. With the guys, it's just, okay, stand here and I'll see what Hashem tells me. But with Benot Slovchad, right, Moshe is bringing the words of Benot Slovchad, lifnei Hashem. And again, when we use the word lifnei Hashem, that's like when we bring a korban. That's like when we do the shalosh regalim in the Beit HaMikdash, right? Usmachtem lifnei Hashem shivat yamim. And what did Hashem say? Yes, daughters inherit. If there are no sons, the daughters inherit. And if there are no sons, right, or daughters, then the closest relatives, right, are going to inherit. So Benot Slovchad asked this question. So you want to tell me, right, is the lesson that we learn from here that you should always ask a question, because if you don't ask questions, you're leaving something out, right? The Mefarshim are going to have to tackle that, right? Because that's going to be a big question that we're going to have. How are they dealing with that? Are the Mefarshim going to, and the Midrashim going to look at Benot Slovchad as role models, right, as something positive, or not? But their answer is so positive, and we speak about them in such glowing terms. So again, what we're going to try to analyze next time, we're going to just finish with our last shot. What we're going to try to analyze next time is this idea. Is this idea of, so what are the messages do we learn from Benot Slovchad? What will really stay with us for generations? Not just from the pshat that we see, they really did it in such a respectful way. They come to the leaders, right? But when you analyze from the view of Chazal and from the view of the Mefarshim, right, what is the legacy of Benot Slovchad? How should we understand and really internalize this message? So we want to go one step further. Look at the end, right? Look at the end. I have Perek Kav Zayin. How does the Perek end of Benot Slovchad, right? Daughters inherit if there are no sons. And then it goes through all the close relatives. And then it says, right after this whole piece, we're right on the cusp. We're going into Eretz Yisrael. Who's going to lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael? It's going to be Yehoshua bin Nun. So both legacies of Yosef through Ephraim and Menashe are really going to be the driving force to go into Eretz Yisrael. Because what are the daughters asking? Tana lanu nachala. We want an inheritance. What were Bnei Yisrael always saying every time there was something difficult? Before Yamsuf, with the Meraglim. Every time there was a challenge with Korach, Nitna Rosh, V'Nashuva Mitzrayma. We want to go back to Mitzrayim. And what are the Bnos Lofchad saying? We want to go forward. But once we find out that the daughters are going to inherit, so we have, and look in Perek Lamed Vav, and we're ending with number 11 today, the rest of Shevet Menashe is upset. Because what's going to happen? There are five daughters, right? Five daughters, they're going to marry five husbands. What's going to happen? They're going to inherit five sections, the whole section of Slavchad. And what's going to happen with it? The ownership is going to go out of the Shevet. Obviously, the piece of land can't move. But the ownership is going to go right through the husband. So what's going to happen? So let's just start and see that the influence of Benot Slavchad was so powerful. They were able to change the conversation. Look at number 11, Bamidbar Perek Lamed Vav Pasuk Aleph. Vayikrivu Rashei Ha'avot L'mishpachat B'nei Gilad. Which means, we give their history, right? So their yichus is important. They come close, right? Not complaining negatively. They're speaking before Moshe and the Nesiim, right? Not all the leaders like Benot Slavchad did, but, you know, they're kind of doing a Cliff Notes version, right, of what Benot Slavchad did, meaning they're getting the general idea, but they're coming close, they're speaking respectfully, but they're saying if they get married to other people, look at Pasuk Gimel, right, V'nigra'a nachlata minachalat avotenu. That whole inheritance, the ownership, right, it can't move, but the ownership is going to be for another Shevet. So they're speaking in this very wonderful way, which means they learned from Benot Slavchad how the conversation has to go. Instead of being angry and complaining, right, you have to do it in an inclusive way, in more of a way that also shows respect. Pasuk Vav. Sorry, let's go to Pasuk Hey, right? And what is Hashem's answer? Ken matei b'nei Yosef dovrim, right? B'nei Yosef are speaking correctly. But right away it says, Vayitzav Moshe et b'nei Yisrael. So already Moshe knows the answer. And he did get a tzivui from Hashem. But it's not like, oh, he's bringing their words to Hashem. So Pesach Sheni was good. Benot Slavchad are better. B'nei Menashe are okay. But they're not as good as Benot Slavchad. But they did change the conversation. And then they are told, right, they can marry whomever they want. But they should marry within their Shevet and within their family. So what does that mean, right? What is going to be their decision and their action? So we're going to do next week. We are going, it's a cliffhanger, right? What do all the Midrashim say? What do the Mefarshim say? And that's what we're going to go through all of this for next week. Yes. Ah, the Medrash is going to say that the youngest was 40 already. They get married and they have kids who inherit.
I have a question. In Israel now, there's a lot of little girls and women with the name Noah, but nobody calls their kids Hogla or Milka.
Well, there are a lot of Milkas, but...
You know what a bunch of kids does?
What?
A lot of
Tirzas. But, you know, no one does. I do know one family that did all the...